Okay, welcome back. Hour number two. Stand by for me here while I send one quick message here to the webmaster. Hold on. Okay. Okay. All right, there it goes. Okay, all set. It's our Friday night edition of the Jeff and Erica Hour on the most grave and horrific crime ever committed against humankind. I don't think that's an overstatement at all. What do you think, young lady?
No, it's really quite unbelievable what we're witnessing.
Staggering. And it's being played out, a lot of it, under cover of cover. They've hidden it so that the average person just doesn't know, unless they're afflicted by it. And many are. Many, many are. We have now a new number of 81% of the populace that is vaxxed, and we think that the majority of those are already fighting observable and visible symptomologies that are not fun. In fact, they're horrible. We've brought so many stories forward about this. It's crazy. Let's see. That still hasn't arrived. You might want to try and send it again. People are playing with my email bad.
It should be there any second.
Yeah, I keep reloading and reloading. There's a story that came out today that I want to run, and that's what I'm waiting for here so I can send it off to get it put up so you all can see it. And it's from the University of Maryland, and they have a whole department that works on aerosolized issues of any kind you can imagine. And they've done a formal study, and you'll know that we have been for a long time urging people to consider, they have to make the decision, wearing an N95 mask whenever they're out. All right, well, the University of Maryland did a study, and they have found out that N95 masks will stop the spreading. Let's say that George Smith has COVID, and he's throwing out viral particles. He's shedding. If he wears a mask, is it 95% in the headline?
Near perfect, it says.
Okay, it's over 95. It's around 97%.
98%, it says. He's
98.
Stopping,
okay.
Yeah.
Right. So 98%, if you wear an N95 mask and you're infectious with COVID, it's going to stop it. You're not going to be shedding on other people. Only 2% will get out of that good, competent N95 mask. Now, the little surgical masks are no good. They don't work much. So this still is not here. I don't know what to do. If you'd send it again, that would be appreciated, I think.
Okay.
That's all I can do. I'm going to restart the mail if I can, because there's something going on with the mail. Somebody said that once. Okay. So anyway, here's the point. The University of Maryland study did a very thorough job and determined that if somebody has H5N1, they literally no longer will broadcast the infectious virions, the viral particles. The mask works. And what they couldn't do, though, is demonstrate that it works both ways, because they don't have people who are infected that can stand there and breathe on people who are going to wear a mask to see if it works. But I think anybody with common sense will understand that it works both ways, either from internal emission, exhalation through the mask, it'll stop 98%, or inhalation around other people who are throwing off spike protein, viruses, whatever. So these masks work, and this is a very important story. Hopefully we can get it posted here in time. Okay. Start. So what else is going on that we want to mention here just as a prelude before we start the first video?
Well, I'm hearing a lot more about sudden cancers. A lot more.
Well, do we call these turbo cancers? I think we do.
Well, I would say more like surprise cancers. And yes, they do tend to be in advanced stages.
But these are
people that have been walking around perfectly normal, spending time with friends, family, you know, seeming perfectly fine, and yet they've got cancer. They went to the doctor for one reason or another. Maybe they weren't as fine as they look. And they're being told that they have stage 4 cancer. Now, some of these people were the ones that received their injections 2 or 3 years ago now and then didn't get more than the two initial ones. And yet here they are 3 years later with a cancer diagnosis, which is no surprise. All of this was predictable, all of it.
Well, we spend a lot of time backing that up. And I think a lot of people are wearing masks, hopefully, because of the information out there. This is a big story. I'm going to have to send it two ways now. It did finally arrive, so we'll get this over. I want you to see, it's a simple illustration showing the four different kinds of common masks and how they work and how they were found to work and perform in the University of Maryland study. Let's see here. Masks, send that off again. All right. There. Okay. Let me pull this up, by the way, while we're waiting. Study shows N95 masks near perfect. This is from the School of Public Health at the University of Maryland. Near perfect at blocking the escape of airborne COVID-19 virus particles. That's a remarkable, this is a big story, and I can't wait to get it posted. So we'll get to that in a few minutes. First video up tonight is Dr. William Mackis, who is going to tell us about these surprise cancers. And they are surprise, in the best sense, that they're often deadly. And when people start presenting at ERs and emergency clinics and so forth, and they didn't know that they had stage 4 brain, breast, whatever cancer. They're anywhere. They didn't know. That, to me, is a sign that there's really no immunological function left in the body, or very little. Is that correct? How would you phrase it?
Yeah, that part of it that's responsible for surveilling for cancer is basically offline.
Right. It's crazy. All right, here's Dr. Mackis. He's talking in specific about the Moderna mRNA, yes, mRNA, cancer vaccines, right? So the $500,000 therapy for turbo cancer patients. Now, there's no shortage of turbo cancer patients, and you'll hear him talk about this. It's another incredible effort at wealth transference, among other things. Nothing has been proven to stop turbo cancer yet. Once it's on the loose, there's nothing that can be done. Not so far as we know. Now, we're watching that very closely. Go ahead.
What he's going to talk about is how, it's an mRNA treatment for cancer, and what they do is they take a sample, a biopsy of your particular cancer, and they determine which proteins it's expressing, and then they'll make a vaccine, another protein expression vector type of vaccine, that will instruct your body to make that protein and then go around the body and seek out that protein and destroy the cells that are producing it. You know, the problem with that, though, is cancer cells mutate, and maybe that's effective for a little bit of time, but is it right, really going to get all of the cancer cells? And, you know, cancer is really a derangement of the metabolism. You know, so we're conditioned to think that the cancer is the tumor. No, the cancer is the symptom of a deranged metabolism. But as long as they can keep you thinking that the tumor's the problem, then we can target the tumor, and when the tumor goes away, we can convince you that your cancer is gone. Well, not usually it comes back because you haven't corrected the metabolism.
You said it right.
But anyway.
You summed it up when you said, as long as they can keep you thinking, we can just add a little on to that, as long as they can keep you thinking what they want you to think, mm-hmm. they own the game. They own the whole thing. It's that simple. All right, here's...
Well, my guess is people will be so, probably shocked and terrified of their diagnosis mm-hmm. that they will instantly acquiesce to this.
No question. No, I agree. $500,000 a shot. Come on. Here's Dr. Mackus on about 10, 12 minutes. We'll see how it goes.
Everyone, welcome to another episode of 15 Minutes with Dr. Mackus, my new hard-hitting medical podcast. mRNA cancer vaccines are getting a very big push right now from media in Australia and in the UK. Now, they're not quite ready for prime time yet. mRNA technology is extremely unpopular because of the disaster that was the COVID-19 mRNA vaccines, which were neither safe nor effective and had probably the worst side effect profile of any pharmaceutical that has ever been released. Last year, there was an Australian doctor, Professor Richard Scollier, who had the most aggressive brain cancer possible, a glioblastoma. And he was put on a very special treatment. He held a press conference about this in September of 2023, and here's how the conference went.
I stand here today as a doctor, a pathologist, a researcher, and a clinical leader who has dedicated my career to saving lives from melanoma. I also stand here today as a devoted husband to Katie and a proud dad of three amazing teenagers, Emily, Matthew, and Lucy. And devastatingly, as of June the 5th this year, I also stand here as a terminal brain cancer patient with grade 4 IDH wild-type glioblastoma, the worst subtype of brain cancer, a brain cancer for which standard treatment and survival rates haven't changed in nearly 20 years. It's essentially incurable. No one survives it, and no one saw it coming, least of all me.
I believe Dr. Scollier developed turbo cancer from the COVID-19 mRNA vaccines that he was forced or mandated to take to keep his prestigious job as a pathologist, oncologist, and cancer researcher. Turbo cancers are extremely aggressive cancers that develop after COVID-19 mRNA vaccination with Pfizer or Moderna. And brain cancers are the second most common turbo cancer that I'm seeing after lymphomas. And usually these brain cancers are going to be glioblastomas, but sometimes they are other rare tumors. Dr. Scollier goes on to describe the special treatment that he is receiving from Moderna and Merck.
Rather than just a devastating challenge, I can see my diagnosis is also a unique opportunity to progress research and treatment for another incurable cancer. So here we are today, 4 months after my diagnosis, with incredible guidance from Georgina, supported by the Melanoma Institute team and unwavering support from my family, for which I can never thank them enough. We have embarked on a never-before-trodden path of applying melanoma science to treat my glioblastoma. So what have we done? I've not had the standard treatment protocol for brain cancer and instead stand here today as patient zero in what may become the new frontier of brain cancer treatment. Less than 3 weeks after my seizure, I became the first brain cancer patient in the world to have combination neoadjuvant immunotherapy. So before surgery to remove my brain tumour, this was my frontline treatment. Georgina warned me of potential side effects of immunotherapy. I'd had a combination dose, which can be more toxic than single agent. Fortunately, my side effects were manageable. I had some nausea and vomiting, fevers with trouble sleeping, and at times uncontrollable shivers. The surgery to resect my tumour was planned for 12 days later to give the drugs time to work and to activate my immune system against the cancer cells. And I'm also proud to announce that only days ago I had another world-first treatment for my brain cancer. I stand here today as the first brain cancer patient to have a personalised cancer vaccine with combination immunotherapy instead of standard treatment.
All right. How does that strike you to hear that? A personalized cancer therapy. How is that going to extrapolate to take care of millions of people, billions, with turbo cancer, each of whom might need a personalized protocol of cancer vaccine? What is the reality of achieving something like that? This guy's obviously a test subject of one of the original types. They're working on it. But if they have to be personalized, how are they going to roll that out?
Well, as I said, they take a sample of the tumor and they see which proteins.
I got it. But I meant in terms of volume, a billion people.
It'll be for the select few that can afford it.
Right. That's the point. Thank you. Yeah. And again,
but still have any money left, right?
This transfer of wealth thing, and I got to think that many, if not most, of the health insurance corporations will somehow find a way to step around a $500,000 therapy protocol. They'll just say, no, this is not covered, whatever. I just don't see it.
Yeah, they usually don't cover experimental treatments.
No, that's exactly the point. I can't see it happening. All right, anyway, let's go back.
The vaccine is based on my specific tumor DNA and RNA. It was administered at the Melanoma Institute in the same clinic where melanoma patients receive their personalized vaccines on a clinical trial that Georgina is overseeing.
So what treatment did Dr. Scully actually receive? He talks about combination immunotherapy. He talks about a cancer vaccine.
This is a very important question that Dr. Mackis is laying out. What did the doctor actually receive? Now get ready for the two-step shuffle here. It's coming.
But he never mentions mRNA. He never mentions Moderna or Merck, the two companies that provided him with his treatment. Now, standing beside him is a very interesting person. This is a family friend, but it's also a famous medical oncologist, Dr. Georgina Long. Dr. Georgina Long is actually currently running trials for Moderna and Merck with personalized mRNA cancer vaccines. Now, I've dug up one of her papers that she published on this combination therapy. And what's fascinating about these papers is that they're never using these mRNA cancer vaccines by themselves. They are always combining them with established immunotherapies that have been shown to have some effectiveness.
Here's the kicker. Hold on.
Right now from media in Australia and in the UK. Now, they're not quite ready for prime time.
All right, hold on. It went the wrong way. I got to get back to where I was. All right, here we go.
He talks about combination immunotherapy. He talks about a cancer vaccine, but he never mentions mRNA. He never mentions Moderna or Merck, the two companies that provided him with his treatment. Now, standing beside him is a very interesting person. This is a family friend, but it's also a famous medical oncologist, Dr. Georgina Long. Dr. Georgina Long is actually currently running trials for Moderna and Merck with personalized mRNA cancer vaccines. Now, I've dug up one of her papers that she published on this combination therapy. And what's fascinating about these papers is that they're never using these mRNA cancer vaccines by themselves. They are always combining them with established immunotherapies that have been shown to have some effectiveness. This is a paper that describes the treatment that Dr. Scollier received. It is a combination therapy that combines Moderna's mRNA cancer vaccine. Here it is named mRNA-4157, and it combines it with a immune therapy called pembrolizumab, which is Keytruda. That is a drug that's produced by Merck. Keytruda.
I think many of you have seen the television commercials for Keytruda over the years. I even have. So this is an on-the-market product that has shown some benefits with some cases.
Adding the mRNA cancer vaccine gives you slightly better results, and so let's do that instead. But it's going to be the other drug that's going to be doing the heavy lifting. I suspect, now I could be wrong, but I suspect that this may be why all the major drug companies are rushing to buy up all the small cancer drug makers. So Pfizer, for example, spent $43 billion buying Seagen, which has a cancer treatment that's not based on mRNA. And I think they're all rushing to buy these companies so that they could combine these semi-efficacious cancer drugs with mRNA technology that doesn't actually work so that they could actually show some benefit or some improvement. And since they're giving it to cancer patients, they don't give a damn about safety. They don't really give a damn about efficacy. They just want to show enough efficacy to be able to sell it.
So you get his point. They're using Keytruda, which has some efficacy, in tandem with the new so-called cancer vaccine, which does nothing, in his view, apparently. It's a con. It's a hustle. Are you surprised? You shouldn't be.
And this is where the big money is. This is where the big money will be made over the next 5 years. The money is in mRNA technology, and mRNA technology will have to be rehabilitated. They will try to explain and probably put the blame on Donald Trump that the COVID-19 mRNA vaccines were rushed, that they had to cut corners, that it was Donald Trump's fault, and that the first mRNA vaccines, which were the COVID vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna, were actually faulty, and that they're sorry, and that they cleaned up the technology from any DNA plasmids or any DNA contamination. And now the mRNA vaccines are good. They're amazing. They cure cancer. They're going to treat influenza H5N1. I think this is where we're going. So to summarize, they've got mRNA cancer vaccines. They're not ready for prime time yet. They're going to be waiting until the technology has been rehabilitated. But they're building mRNA factories all around the world, so we know that they want to sell this technology and why there is massive money in it.
Any comments on this? This is a real scam, it looks like, from what he's saying. Keytruda is doing the heavy lifting. It's a proven, somewhat effective effort to control cancer. But the actual mRNA cancer vaccines are completely unproven. And at this point, in his mind, I see where he's going. He considers them worthless at this point. And it's an mRNA platform, which nobody wants. So he's suggesting they're going to try and rehabilitate mRNA and present it as the dream that we thought it was in the beginning before Trump made us rush and bungle the whole thing. They don't mention to the extent that they've killed tens of millions just in this country with that faulty mRNA vaccine called COVID-19.
Well, the selling point with these cancer vaccines, so-called cancer vaccines, is that they're going to be personalized. So we're going to tailor it to your type of cancer.
Yeah. But how can they...
And that will have some appeal to naive people.
How can they do any kind of a testing evaluation process by using other drugs in tandem with the vaccine, the so-called cancer vaccine? It should be used by itself in a standalone test, a trial, but it's not. This is what he said.
Well, it wouldn't work as well on its own. In fact, it might not really work at all.
That's what
he said. So you've
got
to combine it with something else, which I, you know, that's not entirely uncommon in, you know, for as far as cancer treatments go, but
well,
the price tag on it is daunting.
Transfer of wealth. Absolutely. Here we go.
How much money? This much money.
And there are oncologists now calling for it to be stopped, the mRNA technology. Mm. So there is still debate around that. And it's, I think it's good. We need debate, but we need open debate where we really can look. The other thing is going to be cost, Nana. So we're looking with this particular vaccine at £400,000 per patient.
£400,000 is $510,000 per treatment. That's where the money is. Not with high-dose ivermectin, which costs dollars a treatment. Not with high-dose fenbendazole, which costs pennies per treatment. Not with high-dose vitamin C infusions, or turkey tail, or chaga mushrooms, or garlic, or ginger, or resveratrol, berberine, curcumin, quercetin, bromelain, IP6, CBD oil. No, no, no. They don't want you taking any of these things. They want you to be taking these $500,000 treatments. So that's it for this episode. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you in the next episode. I will.
Okay. And thank you, Dr. Mackus. That was very well stated. From what I heard, the trialing going on right now with these personalized cancer vaccines are being augmented with Keytruda, among other things. There may be other things involved as well. So how can that... It sounds to me like another scam, which these people are very good at, always have been.
Well, the scam is that they have created cancer in the population. Now they're...
Well, they can't lose. They've got endless patients. You're right. Totally right. Of course. Yeah. And why is cancer breaking out in so many people? Well, because we have 81% injected, at least, and their immune systems, their anti-cancer potential, has been erased or largely destroyed. It's gone. They've got no defense.
Which makes you wonder. I mean, you do have to have something of an immune system to respond to chemotherapy. You know,
that's
the chemotherapy can weaken the tumor or the cancer to a point where the immune system can take care of the rest of it. Is that going to happen in this situation, where that innate immune response is completely decimated?
You got me.
I doubt it.
Yeah. All right. If you all can go to guests again and look under our names, and you'll find the man. I'm going to do it, so I'm sure it's there. We're having a little problem with the webmaster here. I think we've got it, though. Let's see. Guests. Can you pull up guests on your end? Are you able to do that? Make sure it's there, too. I just want to be sure. Okay. There it is. More proof, you'll see it, that N95 masks work. Okay? Let's see if we can get that link to come up. It comes up.
It's there.
Very good. All right. That's the University of Maryland study. Scroll down just a little bit, and you'll see the four primary, most common used masks. Now, these people in the illustrations, ostensibly or allegedly, or in a depiction manner, are infected with H5N1, the virus. They've got COVID. Put the mask on them, and you can see how many viral particles are released through that mask. Top left, top right, bottom left, bottom right. Take a look. Now, this is a big-time study, and I think this is very, very important. And where's that? I'm trying to find their exact... it's called University of Maryland's Public Health Aerobiology Laboratory. Okay? It's a continuation of investigations by that lab into how contagious respiratory viruses, such as influenza and H5N1, contaminate the air. Now, I'm sure they're working on bird flu, but it's, COVID-19 is the big name attached to this study right now. What do you think?
Well, there's, of course, all this controversy now because the whole topic of masks was politicized. But I can tell you firsthand from people who are affected by shedding, they swear by these things. If they wear a properly fitting N95 mask, their shedding sickness is dramatically curtailed, dramatically.
And what do you think? Are they out there telling people that they work? Is there any response indication from them?
Well, it depends on who's involved in the conversation. Many times somebody will come in and say masks don't work, and they'll start spewing their rhetoric. But no, you know what works for you and you know what doesn't. And every person that is affected by shedding, to the degree that they are sickened, if they're exposed to whatever it is that's coming off the vax, if it's gases, VOCs, or the spike protein, this N95 mask, if it's properly worn, mm-hmm. works. Hands down, it works. Now, the other issue is smells, because many of these same people have been sensitized to the smell. It doesn't work as much for the smell, but it does cut down on it.
The idea of these people being hypersensitized so they feel that they can and they say that they can actually smell vaxxed people walking past the front of their house on the sidewalk, seriously. Or
yes.
If there's a window open, they can smell their neighbor who's been vaxxed. Well, these people are hypersensitized. But that hypersensitivity is actually an injury to their body.
Yes, that's right.
Is that a safe statement?
Yes. So we know the mechanism of how this hypersensitivity comes about, and we can thank the legions of people over the years who have developed multiple chemical sensitivity or environmental illness. And it comes from a poisoning, essentially. And, you know, the trigger can be virtually anything. But, you know, a lot of times it's some kind of synthetic chemical. If you get a high enough dose of it, or if you have repeated exposures to it, or a combination of them. And what happens is you release something called heme oxygenase, mm-hmm. which is the universal stress enzyme. Your body produces heme oxygenase when it's exposed to any kind of stress, in particular oxidative stress, but all kinds of stress can even be psychological stress. So the job of heme oxygenase is to break down heme, and it breaks it down into three things: iron, bilirubin, which should get converted to bilirubin, and carbon monoxide. Yes, the same carbon monoxide that's toxic at, well, virtually any levels. But in the body, carbon monoxide is a signaling molecule. And if you get enough of it, it will sensitize the nervous system to whatever this offending agent is. And in the past, it's typically been things like chemicals. It can be mold toxins. It can be biotoxins from Lyme or Lyme co-infections. And most recently, in the past couple of years, it's been the SARS-CoV-2 virus and the proteins associated with that virus, most notably the spike protein. And so it's the result of a poisoning, essentially. The only people that can smell this are the people that have been poisoned by it. And if that goes on long enough, it tends to spread in so far as the other things in the environment that you might start to react to increase.
Got it.
That's very common. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. you really do want to get a handle on that and try to calm down that response. And you can do it through a number of ways. You can start by eliminating other possible triggers to try to reduce the load on the immune system, whatever toxins might be coming into the body, and that includes EMFs. Mm-hmm. I would not overlook any EMFs that you might be in your living space, in particular where you're sleeping. The body sees that as a toxin. And then oftentimes people will have to resort to what's called limbic system retraining, which is re-educating the immune system to not respond, not to have this hypersensitivity response, because even though it's detecting the toxin, typically the toxin is not present in an amount that's going to hurt the person. So we call it a maladaptive stress response. It's disproportionate to the actual threat.
Right.
And so staying in that kind of hypersensitized state, first of all, the body's in sympathetic overdrive. It's on high alert. It's looking for threats. It can't relax. And when you're in that state, you really can't repair and regenerate. And you have a very high likelihood of going on to develop an autoimmune disease because the immune system is so jacked up.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be, you know, debilitating. You don't have to do anything. I mean, there's maybe you just want to avoid the trigger. You know, but life is going to become difficult in that situation, given how prevalent this toxin is right now.
Right.
But at the end of the day, it's an over response. It's disproportionate to the actual threat.
And to roll that back is not easy. So I'm not saying it can't be done, but it's not easy at all. We have another image here. Look under our names and you'll see it. It's entitled How the Bioweapon Kills. It's a very interesting little layout. It's just like a poster. It's got SARS-CoV-2 mRNA vaccination at the top in the center, and it shows the various stages and what happens after the injection. Anything you want to add to that on this?
Yeah, that's it's probably
layout.
A little more science than most people want, but yeah, it's a good comprehensive map of how things go awry from having been injected with this stuff.
Let's do this. How things were planned to go awry
right.
After the injection of this bioweapon. Huh?
And I wouldn't imagine that this, if they roll out some mRNA injection for bird flu, that it would be much different. This is not a natural thing to do to the body. You're not going to have any beneficial response to it.
No. Back to the University of Maryland N95 mask testing. Just remember that they're looking at bird flu too, I'm sure. But beyond that, the test shows output from a sick person through the mask, how much gets out. It works both ways. It'll also show how much comes in from the outside. Now, the outside random air will have far less numbers of viral particles, virions, than the person exhaling it, the sick person. So the external H5N1 in the air will be more dispersed and fewer in number. So the masks being 98% effective at stopping the exhaled viruses will be probably 110% effective of stopping any coming in from the outside environment. You follow? It goes through or it goes out. It doesn't matter. It works both ways. But because the concentration from the outside is going to be far less than someone sick and emitting it from the inside of the mask, you're going to have better coverage just wearing a mask around people who are dropping and spreading any number of viruses and bacteria. Just keep that in mind. They work. And here's hardcore proof that they do.
Yeah.
All right, I hope that's clear. And don't forget...
There's any number of infections that are circulating right now.
Lots of them.
You know, the measles, there's outbreaks of
that's
measles in
back.
Several areas right now.
We don't know if the measles, most of the measles vaccine measles victims have had the COVID vaccine or not, but I would suggest they might because it is suddenly surging above the norm. These
mm-hmm.
people are, they are immune compromised, remember.
Yep. And of course, they'll blame it on, you know, children not getting vaxxed for measles, when the circulating measles virus is coming from those who had the vax.
Absolutely. Absolutely correct. Okay. Let's go to our reader section here. Shedding hypersensitivity. How's that? Where do you want to start?
No, let me get there.
We have amyloidosis. We have dying pets. That's another one we need to look at. And then turbo cancer, as well as shedding. Hypersensitivity.
Well, we should just do that since we just talked about it.
Okay. All right. Let's see here. All right. Here we go. This is from, I won't even mention it. Remember, in the very beginning, there was only certain people. There were only certain people that could smell it in the group we discussed. That you had to train your brain to smell it. I think the reason most people can't smell it is because it's almost like an intuition or a superpower. I really feel the smell is different for everyone, which is really strange, which also indicates to me that those who could smell it, that we have some sort of weird intuition or weird reaction possibly going on in our nose and our brain. Go ahead.
Who knows, someone needs to study this? Because I have friends that could smell really, really good, and they smell nothing. Some of my friends have said it's like a gift or intuition. All I know is I'm certain I can smell it. I've been tested, and I could pick out who is and who isn't. All the people I smell it on have mRNA vaccines. I smell a very strong, odd smell that I've never smelled in my life, so I cannot compare it to anything. That's why I say it is alien technology. Well,
it's alien to good health, that's for sure, if not the other kind.
No, it really is an interesting response. Whatever the smell is that they're smelling, it's something unique to whatever's been done to these people. And you're right, it's not of this world, I'm sure. But no, we have more people becoming sensitized to the smell. And the reason is because they've hit that threshold and they're toxic now. I mean, if you get enough of that carbon monoxide, mm-hmm. it signals to the nervous system that this is real danger. And whenever you're around that, the sensory input is amplified. And it typically starts with smell.
Of sorts. I really do. It's not norm.
Yeah.
Not normal.
Yeah. So, but again, being in this state of hyper-vigilance, you know, your nervous system is tied in with your immune system, very intricately, actually. And if it's in that state constantly, what can happen over time is that you begin to react to more and more things that were not very provoking at all in the environment. And believe me, we live in a soup of chemicals. So it can be any chemical at any time. You just hit that limit again, and now you can't stand to be around laundry detergent, or you can't walk down the pesticide aisle in the ag store. And so it generally starts with smells, because smell is directly tied into the limbic system. It's a very primal response. But in people where it gets really bad, it can go on to sensitivity to light, to sound, to touch, and then just pain. And we do have people that in that situation where all they have to do is actually see or detect a vaxxed person, and they will get some kind of pain syndrome as a result.
Uh-huh.
And they're not hypochondriacs. No, that's the nervous system basically collapsing. It's so overwhelmed and confused, it's reacting to everything. I mean, there's people that will actually react to water.
It's ruined.
It can get that bad.
Your neurology. And I hope it comes back. But this thing is just horrible. How many different ways have we assayed and laid out on the program here in these 4 years that this injection, primarily, don't discount being infected with the virus, but how many different ways are we seeing symptom profiles of people dying or being taken down by this? Dozens.
Yeah, multiple.
Dozens. It hits everybody differently. There are a lot of variables, but it's not just a one horse show.
At the end of the day, you know, all of these, whatever, cancer, neurodegeneration, and this hypersensitivity response, it's an immune system that is now severely dysregulated.
Cuts the legs right off of your immune competence immediately. Okay, here's another one from the Died Suddenly Worldwide group. Go ahead. You got that one? You should.
Let's see. Okay. A friend stopped by yesterday. Their sister-in-law was having to rush to a family member who had just been diagnosed with lung and brain cancer. They were just all on a big vacation together 3 weeks ago. Friend also mentioned that latest blood work numbers are elevated, and the doctor said, "We use different numbers now." Friend called BS. I called it being the you-know-what, meaning the jab. The friend finally agrees with me. My friend asked if I've had any. No. Friend, now you know why I avoided them. Friend is also on the wait list for a hip replacement. I'll be shocked if they manage the full year to get it without further injury. Doctor says the risk of head and femur breaking off is very high.
Good luck. Not good. All right, we're going to move right on to the next one. This has to do with our dearly loved pets. These are dogs and cats, primarily, but we think that all mammals may be open to being shed upon and infected or injured. Maybe these pets are actually catching the virus. I don't know if it's go ahead.
Yeah, dogs can definitely be infected. We have published research on that.
With the COVID virus. Interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And wow. I presume cats can as well.
All right, here's one. Someone writes in, I'm seeing things happening with the vaccinated people's pets. Just now on Facebook, running through the feed, the daily Facebook feed, two different friends, both vaxxed, adopted puppies and elderly dogs. They, the dogs, are dropping dead, having all kinds of major medical problems that are very unusual and out of the norm, and they keep adopting. They have no idea that they are affecting their own animals. It's true.
Yeah.
Vaxxed people shouldn't be adopting pets. I mean, it's a noble thing to do, but you're going to kill them in many cases, or make them sick and they'll be miserable. Nothing worse than a dog or a cat that's terribly sick and can't tell you. Break your heart. Okay, we've got one at amyloidosis here.
Yep. So, yeah, amyloidosis, like ALS, is really just exploding now. And amyloidosis, for those that don't know, is another protein misfolding disease where you get these misfolded proteins that originate in the bloodstream and then deposit in various organs and tissues.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be a disease of older people, 65 plus, usually males, and it was fairly rare.
Mm-hmm.
Not anymore.
No.
All right, so this person says, my husband was diagnosed with AL amyloidosis during his first hospital admission on March 26, 2024. During the next 2 months, this terrible disease completely overtook his entire body, going into almost every organ in his body. His oncologist said on our first visit that he was the sickest patient with amyloidosis he has ever treated. Sadly, he passed away on Monday, May 27. Our family is completely devastated to have lost our everything at only 54 years old. I promised him I would make it my mission to educate people about AL amyloidosis. While following this group, I have learned so much, but more needs to be done, and more doctors need to learn about this disease. And there were several responses. This one says, so sorry for your loss. This is a horrific disease that is so underdiagnosed. We lost our dearest brother-in-law only a few weeks after his diagnosis. He had been to every specialist trying so hard to find out what was wrong. Yeah. May you find comfort in your memories.
AL amyloidosis, let's define that real quick for everyone.
All right, so there's a couple different types of amyloidosis.
Yes.
AL stands for amyloid light chain, and that actually originates in the bone marrow. And then it enters into the bloodstream and floats around and deposits wherever the blood goes. So it tends to have multiple organ systems involved. And, you know, if it's a vital organ, liver, kidneys are a big target for amyloids because they filter the blood. So does the liver. But they can go anywhere. Brain.
So these are plaques, right? Pretty much. Is that how you'd
Them? It's a misfolded protein.
What's that, like, and a prion?
And it's in the bloodstream, and it, you know, it's non-functional. Mm-hmm. And it's insoluble, so the body's got no way of breaking it down, so they just collect.
They just pile up.
Yeah.
Good luck. And that'll cause microclotting real quick. It's what the spike does, thick blood, basically. Yeah. We hope to get Nurse Ann back on the program fairly soon. She's back at it, the heroic lady that she is. She's got stories for us, she says, and we're looking forward to that as well. Think about this, though. Everyone who's taken the injection, as far as we know, has thick blood. It's sludge blood. And on top of everything else that this terribly ruined blood will do, it'll cause your heart to have to work 2, 3, 4, 5 times as hard to push this crap through your vasculature. It'll wear your heart out. And that's one reason why these shots cause so many people to go into cardiac arrest, and they're gone. Die.
Yeah.
Heart just quits. You can't do it. The blood
is like don't forget that heart, if we can put any stock into that Japanese paper of last year, that heart's running on sugar.
That's completely crazy. No, that's crazy. This, again, dozens and dozens of different ways that these injections... And I don't want to leave the virus out because it's got the same basic components in some ways. Doesn't have the LNPs, but certainly has spike. It's doing that, and spike is bad news. Dozens of different ways that it can kill you. This is why it's very difficult to be overly optimistic about anything changing. It's going to be difficult. Okay, that's it for tonight. Thank you for being here. Pass the program around. Sorry for the jumbling in the beginning of it, but we got it straightened out. We got the visuals up for you so you can look at those and share those as well. All right. Thank you. Get some sleep now.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Have a good weekend, everyone.
We will be right back with more in just a few minutes. Hold on.